Welcome to the Matrescent Medicine Stories. I'm Gemma Michelle of Wild Birth. This is a space to sit at the feet of mothers and their physiological postpartum stories as our ancestors always have. A space to sip from the wisdom of their journey through matrescence. These conversations are in deep devotion to reorienting the cultural narrative of postpartum back to its primal blueprint. Together, we return to the innate wisdom, reverence, nourishment, and alchemy available to us through the lens of physiological, primal, and ceremonial motherhood. Today, I am joined by my dear friend and writing mentor, Noelle Ruth. Noelle is a mother, poet, author, women's circle facilitator, and creator of Saga, a global web of storytellers creating wholeness on earth through writing, voice, lineage, and community. Noelle guides women along the sacred writer path into an elevated creative landscape where living words are born and will heal the world. She facilitates online writing circles, themed writing groups, and a women's writers council where oracular storytelling is embodied and practiced with devotion in community. Noelle is a mama to her firstborn daughter, Etta, who went back to the spirit realm shortly after birth, and Estrella, who was born in June. She lives on a rural island off the coast of Maine, where she channels her own writing about the divine feminine, death, birth, life, land, and sea. You can hear more about her offerings at the end of the episode, or connect with her and her offerings in the links below. This conversation was truly one of the most rich and medicinal I have ever had. The landscapes that she brings us to on her mother path through both life and death is such a prayer I held for this space, and I'm so deeply grateful for her willingness to share with us so intimately. We felt into the free birth and postpartum experience after the passing of her first daughter, her experience of communing with her wise spirit, receiving community support through the death gate, the birth and postpartum of her daughter who chose to walk with her in life, and what it means to hold our men to protecting and tending to these sacred portals as mothers birthing culture. Hello, Noelle.
Hello.
Welcome. I'm so excited to dive into your story. You've been such an inspiration to me over these last few months that we've danced together in community and in writing. So I'm really, really honored that you're coming into this space and bringing your heart into this space, especially because you're freshly postpartum. How many weeks are you now?
Seven weeks postpartum. Yeah, so very fresh. And it's an honor to be here, and also intimidating in a good way, which I love, a challenge as a storyteller to bridge such vast terrain with language, mm-hmm. and like be up for the task and just to show up when the language that's required to express a lot of these things is huge. So it's an expansive opportunity. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being here in such a potent time. I'm really looking forward to seeing what percolates here. So why don't we just start by telling us about where matrescence began for you?
Yeah, so I've been listening to the episodes you've recorded with other women and heard you ask this, and I'm like, oh, what is my answer to that? And honestly, I don't know. And so I think that it's always been with me. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because I'm a Cancer. And so I've always kind of felt like I've been becoming a mother. Maybe it's because of the dynamics that I grew up in a household where a lot of the maternal responsibility kind of was with me. Mm-hmm. But I will say I feel that I began actively embodying becoming mother when I left my ex-husband because I was like, I'm becoming mother, but it's not with this man. And it's just been that slow journey of allowing the mother wisdom to trickle into my body and then become reality through the physical, which was birthing my first daughter in December of 2023, Etta. And so that was really the physical actualization, but it's amazing the layers of mother, like how she calls to us
I love that
and
you say
moves through
that.
us.
Yeah, I heard, I don't know who it was, but I heard somebody once say that matrescence begins the moment that your decisions start orienting to your children. So sometimes that's when your baby is born, sometimes that's when you're pregnant. Myself, like you, I don't remember a time where that wasn't true. I feel like a lot of my life has always been oriented to the spirit babies I was connected to. So I love like that spark of leaving that relationship in service to the children that you felt.
Yeah, that's so beautiful and so cool that we can see that and hold that right now. I don't know about you, but that knowing wasn't available to me in my younger years. So it was just instinct. It was just this nameless intuition of what is ultimately guiding my path. So it's just like taking a moment to celebrate, like, oh my gosh, we can look back and acknowledge what that is and why and the biological wisdom in it.
Truly. That's beautiful. Tell me the story of when at a land, where were you in life? Bring me into that story.
Just as you said that, I was like reaching for my womb. Yeah, so I Etta came through in just an opening to the mystery, a desire to procreate with my partner, and gosh, there's the shadow journey that began so quickly as far as like, oh, skeletons in the closet, let's pull that out. Relationship challenges, let's pull that out. Trauma, let's work through that. It was very immediately deep excavating of ancestral, of in this lifetime wounds. And I guess a good precursor to her arrival is I mentioned like I went through a divorce and I was actually raised in an evangelical community, so I had a really intense experience of exile and having to stand on my own as a woman, and lived out of my car for a year at a point, and was very, very alone and very, very lost, but very brave. And so I very quickly took up the armor of warrior. And so that is an important part of Etta's arrival and sudden departure after birth. I went into having her as a warrior woman. And so I chose the free birth path with her, feeling that that was most aligned with my understanding of sovereignty and strength, capability, liberation. I didn't want to birth in a sensation of captivity because so much of my life here on Earth, this lifetime has had sensation of captivity. So I free birthed Etta, and it was a 30-hour labor, and it was pretty remarkable. The warrior died so fast. Every part of me that I believed was strong, reliable, capable, died in the context of my former understanding of capability. And It was so humbling and excruciating. Just not having a voice there to resonate with mine in the way that I needed. But I saw it through. I saw that free birth through and had her at home with my partner present, and lost a lot of blood and was a bit out of it for a while. And but I just like did my best, you know, tending to her. And I had been educated to my understanding on the process of free birth by taking popular online courses and listening to a lot of podcasts, reading a lot of books. And unfortunately, at 15 hours old, she just stopped breathing immediately in the middle of the night while I was holding her. And we weren't able to resuscitate her, and we had medical professionals come and they couldn't resuscitate her. So my first birth, free birth, my daughter died in my arms. And that was my entry into postpartum wisdom. And it's also the incredible landscape that I'm holding right now, as I've just recently birthed my second daughter, Astraea, 7 weeks ago, and she's here alive. So now I'm like just observing with awe the bridge between death and life, mother of a spirit child, you know, in the shadow, mother in the light, and the artistry and the poetry and the beauty and the richness and the grief alive in both. And I'm like, whoa, like just swinging back and forth between them and feeling a lot of awe and gratitude. But it's knowing that I was going to come talk to you today, I really had to like prepare my heart and my voice to take that trek back to even sitting with the hell that was postpartum, with a dead baby. Yeah.
I'm so glad you're here and sharing, because I just feel, I feel like this story and this medicine is so needed. Like, who's talking about sovereign death?
Yep.
I couldn't find it at all after my early birth, and I craved it so much. Just talking about being in the postpartum landscape while walking the grief wheel in a way that wasn't just going towards like the medical aspects and what went wrong or like what the diagnosis is, but like the actual grief wheel of it. And like that's why your story has been so potent for me. So tell me what that postpartum was like. Like, what were your touchstones and anchors in that ocean of grief?
Wow. Yeah, returning back is like knee buckling. I thought I was the only one. All of the stories that I had heard were success and glory and beauty. And that's what I remember. Just, it was like blinking and being flushed out into this black ocean, like you said, with no mirrors. And only thank God, thank the Mother of God, the light that I had swallowed before birth through my journey, of dismantling indoctrination and coming in, like my soul reawakening and coming into my body, all of those things. I had this light within me. And so many things that I had built my foundation on, as far as my understanding, again, of like strength and sacred and spiritual, and just dissolved like nothing, like ash. And it was like just being pressed down to the holy of holies with only my fingerprints or my fingers that like could just barely make out what was real and what was even happening. Because now, like looking back, I could hardly explain to you what happened during that time. It was such a dark, it was an echo chamber of despair. And it was wrapped in grace. I will say that it was totally held in grace because it was sovereign and because it was real. And from the moment she died, from the moment like she took her last breath and we realized like she wasn't coming back, I was like, oh, just let her go. Like there was no clinging because it was so sovereign, because there was that deep peace of what is natural. And this trust that the whole time I was in the dance with her and I was making choices to honor her. And I just trusted it. And though it was going to take me a really long time to unpack that trust and take it out into the world and begin to receive other people's projections on my experience. I really was held by that deep, deep peace of what is natural. And there's a piece here about no, I'll leave it there for now. Yeah, there's so many avenues I could go down.
Wondering what was the like the energetics of receptivity for you? Like, were you able to receive from community, or was that not accessible to you until later? Because I know that's a really common theme. I mean, after any loss, so I can't imagine this loss. Like, where were you in community after that?
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for kind of like giving me some riverbanks here, because I could just like dissolve into that metaphoric abstraction of death, which is beautiful medicine, but it's good to like just bring refinement to the medicine as well. So that was a huge opening for me in the postpartum, was learning to receive support. I went into the free birth in a new community. I had just moved to this rural island in Maine and had just begun making friends. And so there were women, there were people that I was connected with, but not in like a, hey, come sit on this deathbed kind of way. Like, hey, I'm literally in the other realm, floating on a shell with my baby girl who's on the other side and can't come back kind of way. But there were women who just insisted on showing up. And and like these women are now some of my closest friends and mentors. And I was very quickly connected with a death midwife who was able to talk to me about death and help me understand, help me put like skin around the sensation of what I was experiencing about like, yes, this is like the hardest experience of my life, but there's such beauty to it. There's such truth to it. It feels like just as important as life. And to have mirrors come in, to have women come in who were initiates of this in their own way, just speak that language to me, speak the death language. It changed everything because I was no longer, I was no longer in the throes of darkness as like sickness or corruption. It was, I'm just walking this dark path and it's beautiful and it's pure. And what I mean by that in more practical terms is like suicidal ideation, extreme depression, like schizophrenic tendencies, which I've had in the past, because I was able to have women come in and just like speak truth to me in the darkness, I was able to feel my way through with so much more ease and grace than if I was alone, because I think I would have been more susceptible to like dark voices coming in and getting entangled. So I was able to receive, and that was really the great softening in my feminine experience about what it is to receive. And it really made me also reflect back on my choice to free birth. What fear, like, did I choose free birth out of fear? I think a lot of women choose free birth out of trust, but a part of me chose free birth out of fear. Fear that I wouldn't be able to receive the kind of support that I needed. And so, just like kind of blocking myself off from that possibility of really beautiful support, of trustworthy support where I am sovereign. My choices are honored. Space is held for me and the innate knowing of my body, but also there's loving presence, there's warm voices, there's practical support being offered just to bring like ease and a sense of softness. And so yeah, it's just like big openings of learning and possibility and humanity. Like, just wow, we're all human. We all make the best choices that we can. And even still, we can end up in really remarkable places in all senses of the word.
I'm so glad that you had like a death midwife available to you in that time. Like, just the vision of that feels so powerful.
Yeah, I remember her specifically saying, Noelle, do you think that life is more important than death? And that just reoriented my entire understanding of everything.
How did you commune with Etta in this time? Like, did it feel like she stayed close?
Yeah, oh man. She was close for the first 2 weeks. And this is a time that I can't really remember other than a few snapshots in my mind. Snapshots of wailing, taking a sip of soup that felt like the first ounce of life I'd felt in centuries. But I was just in this dreamscape with her because I died with her. There's like no other way. I mean, I guess maybe there are other ways, but it wasn't my way. I died with her and I went to the other side with her, and For 2 weeks, the world, like the physical world around me, wasn't real, but my world with her in the spirit world was real. And so her and I just had this amazing, like, intimate time together. It was timelessness. It was with me getting to know her. And we were like literally just floating on this big white shell in the middle of an ocean for weeks. And I remember food being brought to us and music. You know, I remember there being some music, but it was really just that. And but then it was like there was this impending sense of something was going to change, something was going to arrive, and it was time. And she walked me through all of it. She just told me, like, it's time to let the sun move, because the sun was just frozen on the horizon, you know, like this blood red sun right on the horizon of the sea. And she was like, I want to see the moon. But in order to see the moon, we have to let the sun go. And that meant that I had to walk. I had to walk into the night without her. I had to, like, really accept that. Oh, these tears just feel so good. Like, crying about her always feels so good, so real. I just had to accept, like, oh my God, I'm now going to be a human, a woman with a dead baby. Like, I have to leave this dream space and stay on Earth, was that realization. And so I just asked her to help me. And I asked God to help me. And I asked the Earth to help me. And the moon began to come up, and she unfurled herself like a big mother bird with these white feather wings and just reached out for Etta. And all I had to do was hand her over. You know, I was just like, all right, go on. And she was so happy. She was like, yes, this is where I want to be. This is where I wanted to be. I came through for something other than walking with you on Earth. And that was her path. That was her wisdom path. That was our dharma, our, like, relationship. That was her commitment, was the medicine that she brought me, brought my lineage, the clearing that she brought to my womb, the refinement that she's brought to my vision, the love that she's brought into my life. All of that she did just by coming, breathing a few breaths, and then deciding to go back to the infinite. And I'm so grateful. She's just the best. She's so smart, and brought so much grace in her departure. So it was a really intimate time, but that handing over was essential for me, because then I realized, like, all right, I'm staying on Earth.
And that was a choice.
Yeah, it was a choice I had to make.
I'm totally putting you on the spot here, so please say no if it doesn't feel good. But is there a piece of writing about that time that you would be wanting to share?
Sure. Let me, yeah, I have my collection of poetry that is going to be released in the autumn, my first, like, public collection of poetry, which is a big part. You know, I've been talking about, like, this bridge between postpartum dance with death and postpartum dance with life. And that bridge to me has been the artistry of it all. Like, the poetry of it all, it's just so alive and sacred to me. And I'm so grateful for both experiences. Right after Etta died, I went, like, deep into some channeling and writing, like, just, and not only was I able to channel really profoundly, like, the raw authenticity of my human experience, but I was able to channel for the Great Mother, who is holding so much death right now and longs for death to be a cultural teacher. And so that's another gift that Etta gave, was, like, gave me the language to be a vessel for our collective maternal experience right now of great loss, great change, and the need to welcome death. Like, things need to die in our world in order for pure and true life to come forth. So this collection that I'm about to release is like all of that. It's what Etta brought through me for the world. Yeah, I think I'll read this one, which is called Daughter. And this was like, again, just my more like human experience of losing her, and the medicine that she has asked me to carry on. The night of winter solstice, I dreamt you came back to me. I nursed you for hours or years, with your small hand patting on my breast like a drum. I will be your drum. The reason your first word is milk. I will be the stretched skin, hollowed out for the earth to sing her song through. I will be the tree, stripped and bent and bolted, the thick stitch that tethers the worlds of air and bone together. I will be alive for you. I will thrum, thrum, thrum for you. Lullaby the battle front line for you. Lift the real banner. Break every cold silence. Be the beat of love through the war for you.
Thank you so much. I'm
Yeah, thank you
so
for that
looking forward.
invitation.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to holding those words in my hands. It's such a gift to the world. I'm really curious to hear your reflection on this, but something I experienced after my early births, and then like the languaging landed in me more recently when I did a few different closing of the bone ceremonies for early births, and then also for mothers who lost their babies after birth. And usually in my closing of the bone ceremony, like a big piece of it is shrinking the field. Like we're so blasted open in pregnancy and in postpartum. It's infinite, as it has to be to bring a baby down. But yeah, a big piece of closing that portal for me is to like I envision shrinking that birth field into like a little egg, wrapping just mother and baby, bringing it back to that dyad. And I was moving into doing that with a woman who had lost her baby. And it was just the languaging that dropped down in that moment of like, no, we can't do that for spirit mothers. Like, there is a piece of our field, I think, that is always infinite because we are mothering in another realm. How was your experience of that? And how does that feel in your body now?
Totally. It's so cool. It's like my root that was once just mine, like this lone tree with these roots. And I'm like, yeah, I'm grounded. Like, yeah, I can feel some things around me. All of a sudden, it's like those roots go so deep. I am now one with the mother tree. And like here to be in resonance, not just with my own channel, but with the collective mother line channel. And So that's like on an earthly sense. But
Yeah.
then of course there's like the astral, just the attunement to the spirit world and the adoration of being a vast, vast woman.
Yeah.
Like I've had to breathe love into those spaces and just like let the breath keep going, like just, or else it can, it has at times felt isolating or just intimidating. Like, how do I stay relatable? How do I be in a partnership with a man?
Yeah.
How do I go to work when I'm holding so much? But I found that a really great medicine is humor. You know, that I'm like waking up and channeling poems for the great mother and like receiving things from the stars. And then I'm like, you know, in a meeting about, I don't know, like creating a graphic design for like a fundraising event. It's just like, it's the humor of our time.
Truly.
That we're being asked to be so wide, but then show up in spaces where capacity is so small and resonance is so distorted. And it's just like, all right, this is when I chose to be here. So I'm just going to see it through as best I can and maybe just kind of let that part be the divine comedy. But there's definitely tragedy. Like there's definitely a lot of grief in it too. Like who can hold us? But that's why I love. That's why I love us, because we hold each other.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, it's such a potent vision of just the infinite mother. Okay, take me to Estrella Landing Inn.
Yay. Oh my gosh, what an amazing thing that I can like just like have these tears of like real loss and sadness that's going to be with me forever. And then I'm like giggling because I have this cute, like amazing baby who is like a queen that came through me and is teaching me so much in the light, like in the rainbow light. It's like amazing. Yeah, so I birthed Astraea and I chose this time to have midwives. Whoa. And that was like a walk of stretching and surrendering and but it was an amazing birth. I learned different things. I like pregnancy, I would say, was harder for me this time. My first pregnancy was like pretty blissful and I was a little like naive and just like a wild pregnancy. But this pregnancy, I was just holding the weight of losing a child. And yeah, it was just like it was a heavier time. The birth was birth, like I didn't want to do it. I think some women like really enjoy surrendering to that, but to me, it's just like I'd rather have more easeful experiences in my life than more agonizing ones. But okay, I'm doing this because I'm called to be a mother. So my labor was 15 hours, and the midwives were amazing. They're women who I actually met in a moon circle after Etta died. So it was just women who like came into my field who I got to experience who they were and their medicine outside of that, like you know, just calling a stranger up and being like, "Hey, do you want to come to the most intimate moment of my life?" No, like I had the opportunity to experience these women, and they held such loving, reverent, attuned space. And Astraea came through in my home, and God, it was just so special to have her stay. to birth a baby and have them stay. And she came surrounded by different flavors of prophecy and archetypal embodiment and yeah, there's like so many stories around her arrival, as I think many women have with the arrival of their children. But I'll just say that she is really here to support the arrival of the golden age. And as many beings coming in are, and it's an amazing thread between her and her sister, that her sister came in as this nutrient for the soil, this composting, healing my womb. And just being this like deep energetic cleanse so that I could then have the most pure, fertile soil for Astraea to come through and be a healthy, plump baby who is rooted here and wants to walk with me and my partner. And now just being in postpartum with her has been a big journey of learning how to protect life with my voice, feeling the grief of broken culture, corrupt culture in life, and just being like, man, this stuff needs some death medicine. Like these old paradigms need to die. And how am I being called to help them die? And how am I being called to just enjoy being like in communion with life and not always feel like I have to take on this role as fighter? Someone told me, like, if you always show up as fighter, you're gonna get a fight. But then it's like, well, who's gonna protect this the sanctity of postpartum? Who's going to communicate? Who's gonna defend if not me?
Yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of the grief boils down to, and that we do have to fiercely protect what should be innate, or which should at least be protected by those around us. And yeah, living in a culture where nobody is taught that that should be done, let alone how to do that, is so big. And like one of the biggest reasons why I've called upon these stories, because there's grief in the fact that it's the mothers, it's the postpartum mothers shifting the culture. We shouldn't have to. And also, what power, really, that we are the ones rewriting it.
What power. Yeah, and in that sense, it's an honor. It's an honor to be here, receiving visions, templates, designs, ideas for creation. And how exciting that our daughters will have some shelter.
Yeah, I think about that so much. Just the prayer that one day a protected postpartum is just mundane for our children. It's just that, of course, that's what we do when, a baby in the community is born and your kids go, "What soup are we making her?" Yeah, I think about that a lot. And for my son, like growing up and seeing how we tend to postpartum, and having that written in him as well feels so important.
So can I ask you a question? Can I like interview you?
Yeah, please.
Well, a question would be how can we It's a, I guess it's a question that's still forming. So maybe we can like find the language around it. So much of this is that like literacy around communication. And I work in communications. So how do we communicate with the masculine in a way that is like firm and rooted in the knowing, but perhaps a little less triggering as far as the dismantling of paradigms and the yeah, I guess that's it. Like, and I'm sure it's different for everyone, but what I'm talking about is really like the culture, like the toxic culture that's really rooted. I feel like every single time that I've tried to confront it, even in like a loving way, I get so much pushback that it's like, okay, now I have to fight just to be heard without yeah, so I'm, you know, a little fumbling over it, but I honor that raw place because I feel like that's where
Where we're at.
I'm stuck. Yeah, it's like how do we communicate, how do we communicate this so that it
I
doesn't
love
just
the
like
question.
come. Yeah, okay, I'll stop, you take it.
I mean, I definitely don't have the answers to it. But I think something I lean on a lot is physiology. I think sometimes that is communicated to the masculine more easily because it's concrete. And I don't think we will ever be able to portray the energetics of postpartum to men. And like maybe we don't have to. But the physiology is a piece that I feel like men can anchor into a little bit more. So like just really speaking to what is happening in the dyad of the mother baby and in our bodies and in like the hormones specifically, like the hormonal matrix is something I tap into a lot because, you know, it might not seem like a big deal to get out of bed when you're not ready or like give the baby away for somebody else to be feeding them. But talking about like the physiological cascade of bonding is something that I found they root into more easily. And then I think another piece I've spoken to a lot, like with different partners I've supported in birth work and my own, is most men's only example of nurturance is from mother. Like they have only typically learned how to nurture a baby, but anything from their mothers. And so you often see men trying to replicate mother in order to nurture their baby, which has all of the best intentions. But like nobody's speaking to how that often causes rupture. And that, like, it's so not personal. But, like, if their only examples of nurturance is like taking the baby and having a turn feeding the baby and, you know, taking care of baby and leaving mother alone, like, that is the example of nurturance they've probably had in their life. And they haven't seen any other option because, you know, they probably didn't see their fathers taking care of their mothers when they had babies. Like nobody's ever had an example of that. So I think a lot of the time I just try to single in on like what nurturance, what fatherhood looks like in the newborn space, because none of them have ever seen it really. And like what fatherhood, like your job as a father, like not even as a husband, not even as a partner, but your job as a father is to tend to mother so mother can tend to baby. And here's the physiological reason why. Like the hormones that are disrupted when, with all the best intentions, you swoop in to try to tend to your baby from the most loving space. But like, here are concrete ways you can root into doing that that is more symbiotic with biology. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. I am so grateful for your wisdom. Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And what it brings up for me is just I guess some grief around this exposing of the vulnerable, the feminine in her really vulnerable, and how at the same time that exposes these like hooks that are of the extractive masculine upon the earth. You know, that's like, oh, the feminine and her vulnerable, rather than protect, try to get more out, rather than give, ridicule that you're not receiving enough. It's like, yeah, it's been very interesting. And I want to preface, I'm not just talking about my partner. My partner's, I mean, we've had challenges, but he's been so loving and really receptive and really willing to work with me. But of course, there have been moments where I'm like, whoa, I'm like just on a different level of sensitivity and sensory perception of the dynamics that are playing out in the microcosm of our home and the macrocosm of culture. And so I'm viewing it through like a neutral lens, like, okay, I get this. I get why this response is occurring, but how can I address it in a way that doesn't just wreak more havoc upon me? So I love what you're saying, and I totally relate, and I just hold space for that grief of like the lack of examples of fatherhood and tending to the mother without shaming her, like for needing more, like pushing her to get back on the level, like get back on the linear. Come on, you know, like,
It's so hard. And I find that, that conversation, those pieces I talk to land a lot easier in the early postpartum, like the first few weeks or even the first 40 days, if you've spoken to him about that portal. But then there's afterwards, right? And that's something that I have found really challenging in my dynamic. And of course, I've seen it mirrored so much is like after that 6 weeks, and he went back to work. And like in those 6 weeks, he tended to it all. He did all those things. But then it's just that expectation of, well, now we're done and we go back to normal, right? So, like, I have found it's just like constantly rooting back into that physiology. And now speaking to like it takes 2 years for the body to somewhat go back to normal, for a mother to feel more like herself. I don't like that phrase because we are entirely different women, but like for our physiology to start evening out, for like her brain is so different for the first 2 years. So just rooting back into that as a reminder, and I found a lot of support in just reaching out for like the energetic needs of postpartum from women. Because really, I think there's a lot about the energetics of postpartum that men just aren't meant to know. Like they're not meant to comprehend that. And I forget who it was, but I remember seeing a post before I gave birth to Arbor that was talking about how Most women's postpartum plans is their husband. And that is, I mean, that was my postpartum plan for sure. And there's so much correctness in that. Like, we need them to be protecting the space and providing the physical pieces. Like, we just can't tend to our baby's physiological needs if we are not fed, if we are out of bed too early. Those core needs, absolutely. But postpartum needs are so much more vast than the physical needs. And so much of it is like the energetic protection and the energetic nourishment and the witnessing in a way that I don't know if men are meant to be capable of.
Well, that feels good because that's like, all right, just liberate them from that expectation and call in, yeah, those who are holding it already, rather than taking on the need to become educator. Yeah, when like you're saying, maybe that capacity isn't even there.
Yeah, I definitely don't have the answer, but that's what I've been feeling into in a lot of these different stories and in my own story. And that, like, really, it is so much for them to hold, and like for a good reason, like that fire walk for them is an initiation for them in a space where they don't have that concrete rite of passage into becoming a parent like we do. Like, I think that fire walk is correct. And I think that pressure of the new father is correct. And also, especially in a culture where they're not like resourced to know how to hold all these different pieces, it's hard. I know that my husband really, really rooted into the physical pieces of like taking the time off work and making sure we're fed and setting up the steam stool and like planning and protecting in that way, which of course was essential. But what he then really, really struggled with was staying present with postpartum, like sitting with me in the intensity and the shadows and the bliss, like simultaneously, that were arising in my system. That, on top of, all of the other things he was rooting into that we needed, wasn't accessible for him at that time. And I had a lot of grief in that. And it was available to me from other places until he was more ready, until like the physical needs were less. And then he could come sit in the postpartum bed with me and like witness what I was going through. But I think to hold both, he wasn't ready for that. And there's a lot of grief in that. And we're also just like, as women, not hearing the stories of how partners have showed up to postpartum from any lens, really. It's so big.
Yeah, I hear you, and I share that experience. Just like, for me, it's like, do I need to try and convince you to be to just like drop in with presents? But that doesn't feel good. Like, I want you to want to. Okay, can I create little invitations? But then just feeling that the to-do list is more attractive than the ceremony. And I'm not gonna argue. That's been a big thing. Like, okay, when what will I fight for? Like, what will I defend, protect? And I've definitely had to choose those moments and then just choose moments where I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna arrive in myself here. I'm gonna text a friend, or I'm going to become a resourced woman and also hold space for the grief that this is not how it should be. And so I can take responsibility for mapping differently next time around, or getting more creative with invitations next time around. And there's been a lot of that, because my first postpartum, I didn't have a baby, so I didn't have visitors. I had people who stopped talking to me in my immediate family because I was to blame for her death. So I was in such remarkable isolation, except for those like two women who snuck in by like knowing the secret words of death and true presence. So this postpartum, it's been like people want to visit, and people who don't understand the embodied sense of sacred or ceremony, who, yeah, just come in with those hungry, let me be with the baby, vibes, and no reverence for mother, no reverence for the dyad, no reverence for the state of the home. People who came and left their mess, people who came and didn't bring anything, people who came and just expected it to be like a fun family gathering, when I'm in this like psychedelic space. So I guess I was like a tangential thing, but it has been, it's been restorative, to feel out the grace in like, okay, maybe there will be a next time and it'll still be human, but there could be more creation, and there could be more death. Like I could be more active in acknowledging what needs to die and how I can usher it into death. Like, how can I midwife these cultural things into death? And a lot of it is in the voice. It's like walking people into, here's an invitation to let this idea go. Because what if we tried this? Then it might feel this way. Then we might be able to connect like this. And I feel like people want to be a part of wholeness, but it takes some like creative storytelling and really remarkable courage to walk those, to walk those lines forth. And I certainly don't have it all figured out. There's like a lot of tension in my throat this postpartum. And the last night I did Carly Rae's nectar yoni mapping practice, and that was really helpful for like just softening, the jaw, and because it's so connected to the pelvis. And I'm hopeful. I am really hopeful that I believe a lot of the women on the planet right now are remarkable storytellers, and we're just in a crisis of imagination. And so like your podcast is such a gift to the planet, because by hearing each other's stories, we're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that was possible. I didn't imagine that. And now I can expand my imagination, and I have permission to sit with a blank canvas, or like create a blank canvas. Like, okay, if none of this existed, how would I do it? And know through birth that we are capable. Like, if I did that, I can do anything. So I can create around this postpartum space in a way that is going to root and carry on and be alive enough to evolve with time. And yeah, that really does give me a lot of hope for the whole world, for culture, that we can come back into these origin points and resuscitate. It's exciting.
It is. Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite parts of dipping into these stories with mothers is like hearing the stories of how mothers are inviting their community into reverence, even if it wasn't something like that frequency wasn't something that they had attuned to before or don't have any of the languaging around. It really is just such an evolving dance because we feel it. Like we feel it as postpartum mothers in every single cell, and it feels like it should be so obvious when somebody walks into your postpartum space, whether it's family or your neighbor or friends or your husband, feeling that reverence and ceremony, as we're traveling the cosmos in dream time with our babies. And that's often not the case. But yeah, just feeling into those touchstones of invitation and permission. and like trusting their innate ability to remember that, even if it is not something that they've touched into in this lifetime. And a little spoiler, I'm bringing the husband's arm to the podcast to ask these questions. It's in the works to come and have fathers talk about their experiences of tending postpartum because, yeah, I have these questions and we need the answers.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. That's like so juicy and oh, that would be great. Thank you. Oh, thank you so much. I'm already really looking forward to that. And I love the the invitation into reverence. Woo, that's good. And that for me feels a little confronting. Like what parts of me feel that I'm not worthy of inviting people into this space to honor my journey or my daughter's journey. I often, as a poet, have to reckon with this fear of being misunderstood. I don't have to say that. I don't say that. I don't have to reckon with it. It just happens. It's something that I'm still moving through. And I have seasons where I'm like, okay, I'm fine being misunderstood. And other times, especially with something like this, something that's fragile, something that feels like so precious. And so often my instinct is like, pull it in and let's just hide and let's just be in the perfection together with our without the risk of exposure to something that could just feel bad. And that's, I think that that's a part of the grace of right now, is there's moments, where we're going to be called to hold space for that kind of storytelling, hold space for that kind of communal reverent ceremony. And then there's going to be moments where we're just like, I'm just not even gonna take this outside. I'm just gonna like hold this flame and maybe it'll change. But a lot of that happened with Etta, where I was like, okay, I have to really decipher here who in my community gets to know what happened. Who would I even invite into this sort like a sovereign death space when like everyone's vaccinated? It's that cultural discord, I think, invites us into some really delicious grace of privacy. And So I'm thank you for saying that, because I'm going to open myself to visioning like, how can I invite community into a reverent space for Astraea and I, and maybe do something in tandem with like the launch of my poetry book, just like honoring death and life together. I loved Kelty's abundance. She talked about the abundance ceremony or abundance gathering. I thought that was really beautiful. And women are just awesome, such beautiful creators.
Yeah, I love how you speak to that because I mean, I don't think there's anything incorrect about like taking our babies and hiding away. I think a lot of that is also just innate and intelligent, like thinking about the mother and the baby, like nestled up in their nest or in the cave. And I think it also kind of relates back to what you're talking about in your decision to free birth. And like sometimes free birth is a choice that is in service to surrender. And sometimes it's because of fear, more often a mix of both, right? But yeah, that's also what it feels like in postpartum, like how much of our protection is absolutely correct. And is there like threads or pieces of us that want to see what else is beyond it as well?
And also like, what's the How can we be in like such tender communication with ourselves that we realize like, oh, I made that decision from fear, and I could have gone this way and perhaps been received very tenderly and it, like both ways. You know, I've found that I've gone out of the bubble too much this time out of fear of you know, like being misunderstood, of thinking like of missing out, fear of I don't even know, just like I don't even know. I'm still in such a fresh place and I'm figuring out like why did I go to that? It's just like people pleasing came up in me, or I was too tired to fight it, or but yeah, it's like those moments of integrity. It's been both for me, you know. It's been like I've pushed people away out of fear, and I've gone too far socially out of fear, and it's just that dance, that push and pull, and I think that might just be part of life. Like, oh, didn't have to do that. I'll figure it out next time. Like, I'll just swing the other way and then come back and try again.
I mean, I experienced that in my postpartum for sure. And in Nicole's episode, she also speaks about having a similar experience of like after the 6 weeks, I really wanted to be witnessed. And like that is such a innate and intelligent and integrative desire. And then that causing me to like go to the grocery store where nobody is present. And like nobody's ready to witness me in like the vastness of going into public for the first time there. And so bumping up against these like really innate desires and then just the cultural lack and like feeling how wrong that felt in my body. I mean, I feel like I'm still integrating that. And it really is just such a dance of playing with like, how does it feel in your body? And therefore, how does it feel in your baby's body? Because you're one and the same. And like, where are these pockets of like safety and beauty in a culture that is largely anti-mother? Not the grocery
Where are
store.
they? No, not the grocery store. And hearing you say that, yeah, just recently, you know, knowing that I was going to come on and chat with you about these things, and you offered such beautiful invitations to me to like drop in and check with like what you're experiencing. And I was like, all right, let me do that. And I think one of the reasons that I pushed out of the cave too much, or let people in too soon, is because I wanted to be witnessed and seen as a mother. Because there's a part of me, you know, having a dead daughter, where I was like, hello world, like I am a mother. I am. Like, look at me, see me, I am a mother. Can you acknowledge, can you talk about my daughter for once? Can you like not talk about me as like, oh, when you become a mother, I am a mother. And look, now I have a baby. Like, you know, it was that, like, it was so well-meaning. Just like, yes, the witnessing, the like, see me in this, that I think I just got overexcited and overeager. I was like, check it out. I've got a baby in my arms, and I did this before. Remember? Yeah, and it was good, and I have had many beautiful experiences of being received, and I think it's good to spend time with like what felt good about those, who was there, what didn't feel good about it, and how can I also like be prepared to give this to someone else? You know, like I found out there's a woman in the community, and I was living in a small community, who's pregnant, and her and I aren't really close. But I'm like, all right, I'm gonna reach out to her now and let her know that I want to be an extension of her support system, and that I plan on bringing her food, and like what are her like needs, and just be that light, be that pocket, and whether she's ready to receive or not, just to begin seeding that reality in this community, in the world, and that's enough, you know, because then we're it's reorienting our biology, it's reorienting ourselves that like this is how we are as mothers, as women. This is what we create. This is what's allowed here. This is what feels good here. And that's contagious. It's infectious. Like the truth is irresistible. And so yeah, I'm definitely going to be keeping my heart open to how I can be the medicine and the presence that I have really longed for myself.
I love that. It has been one of the most nourishing pieces of my postpartum, like leaving that 40 days and then having mothers to tend to and feeling how nourished I was and not depleted, even though I was still 100% somebody who needed somebody to bring my soup, and I was bringing the soup. And like acknowledging the grief in that, and also feeling how good it felt to make both of us soup. I also had like the most beautiful experience in the early postpartum days of a complete stranger messaging me on Instagram being like, "Hey, I live here. Can I bring you food?" And then I inquired further, and she said that she was at the mall and saw my birth work poster. She was into like holistic birth, so she went to my Instagram. She saw I was postpartum, was like, "Oh, we bring her food." And just feeling the, I don't even have words for it yet, but I was like 3 weeks postpartum. She was a complete stranger. She brought her small children and I invited her into my house, and she like pulled up a chair and sat beside my bed and introduced herself and fed me. And it was so healing. And I love that we are, like the permission to go into the world in that way.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. I'm like seeing that, and I could see how that would be an incredible experience. A lot of people, like I had strangers dropping off food when Etta died, because death really shakes a community. Especially infant death. But wellness, like life, you know, it's just amazing the yeah, the difference in responses to things. And I pray for that. I pray for, like you said, I think towards the beginning, like the normalcy of healthy postpartum culture and wholeness. Yeah. It's so easy.
It really is simple.
I mean, maybe it's not really easy if you have like several children. I have like a lot of respect and awe and curiosity about mothering multiple children and still showing up for other women. And that's like something I've experienced is my friends in this community have multiple kids, and so they're pretty busy, and like I want to be bringing them food, so they don't, yeah. It's, yeah. Just prayers for support, you know, for more people to know when they're in a place of abundance, and to know when it's time to give, and to know when it's time to receive, and to just feel like a total neutrality about both, because it is this ebb and flow. And there are times in our lives where we literally can't give, like we're giving everything to the baby, and just to be held in that and not ridiculed, or like tried for people to try and pull you out of it, like give me more. But yeah, that's life. That's the reciprocity of nature, is like we're feeding each other and we're receiving from each other. And that's the flow.
I mean, it's shifting so much in postpartum culture, but just in culture, like this is the foundation for everything else. I think the way that we birth and we mother is really the foundation for culture as a whole.
Yeah, just shameless life. and shameless death, that both are important and we can be with both and we can learn from both. And we don't have to figure either one out. We can't. I mean, maybe someone has, but it's the dance, it's the mystery, it's the feminine. So yeah, when we come back to that cosmic womb, right relationship with the cosmic womb. Anything is possible.
I love that that's the note we're ending on. And I would also love to ask you about your offerings in the world because I, like, my postpartum was held by your offerings so deeply. I was in Noelle's Saga Writers Group, and I think we started when Arbor was 3 months old. It was a 3 month journey, and having, that invitation into creation, but specifically poetry and the mother tongue was so, it was one of my favorite parts of this postpartum. So I would love for you to share all of your offerings with those listening because, my postpartum would have been so different without that gift of like the embodiment and the word medicine in your containers.
Thank you for sharing that. It just makes me feel so good and so happy that the poetry of life nourished you, and that Saga could walk with you during the preciousness of that time with your son. Yeah, so offerings and Saga this fall. So September 2024 will be the opening of our next round of Women Writers Council. And a sneak peek is that this round is going to be focused on writing and telling stories of your lineage, past, present, and future. So receiving like the medicine of the Old Norse Norns who were weaving in timelessness, in that great spiral, where all of the things are dancing together beyond time. We're going to kind of trace that walk. And do it in a place of courage and presence. But I just think it would be so cool for a group of women to be like, okay, I'm gonna write or learn to tell this story that I heard my grandmother talking about, or I'm gonna find something in my lineage, or I'm gonna make something up. I'm gonna channel something from an ancestor, and then come into the stories of now. What's alive right now? What is being born in our lineages right now? What's dying in our lineages? And then move into channeling and visioning for the future. And like, who knows? I think some women may walk out with small collections, or even if it's just like three things to represent this space of cosmic womb creation through words. And I'll be coming out with a one-on-one offering as well this year, which is going to be for women who want to go higher in their creative landscape and really like refine their channels and receive some mentorship and support in pouring into their sacred texts. Women who are like, okay, I have this body of work or this calling, and I want to walk with someone through it. So I'm really excited for that. I love one-on-one. And then on just like a smaller level, I have writing groups, which are shorter timelines, like a month, maybe a month and a half, where a small group of women gather to write together about a certain theme. And those open and close throughout the year. So there's lots of opportunities to lean into devotion to storytelling and expansion in our expression and our creation in the world. And Saga is just like this beautiful old grandmother tree energy that loves holding women who want to circle around her and And together we're creating a web of truth and beauty around the world where our sacred texts are healing our language and healing the world. And we're doing it together. We're doing it in belonging and witnessing. And that's really the best part. It's just that felt sense of like, all right, the depths of my story belong. And it's an honor to learn from you and all of the women that I get to weave with in that space. So excited to welcome more women.
Yeah, I really just. I mean, the poetry has always been needed, but it feels like such potent medicine for this time and for mothers. I imagine there's also women listening specifically to this episode who have experienced loss on some piece of their timeline. So I also wanted to speak to that. You've done specific writing circles for loss a couple times in the past. Maybe you will in the future, but for those women, if you are like craving a space like that, to reach out to you, Noelle, because I truly can't think of like a deeper medicine for the grief wheel than to like write and witness and create and be seen by the other women on the wheel in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for naming that. And yes, I will absolutely be holding more writing groups for women who have lost children, lost babies, honoring the line of connection between us and them, and the fact that our relationships live on and the fruit that is born of those relationships is eternal and so worth tending and so worth experiencing and witnessing how other women are alive in relationship with their children on the other side.
Thank you for doing that work. And thank you for sharing your medicine and your story and your heart here. I'm so, so grateful. It's been such a nutritive conversation, just for myself, on selfish reasons, but I know for the women who are tapping in. So thank you so much, Noelle.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here with us. If these stories have been medicine for you, please help share them by following and sending them to the women in your life who they would serve. The maidens who are beginning to orient themselves to their matrescence, the pregnant mothers preparing for the birth portal, and the postpartum mothers who could be held in their alchemy by these stories. If you have a physiological postpartum story you'd like to share, you can find the link to submit a story in the description. I would be honored to sit with you. You can also find a link in the description to connect with me or book one-to-one mentoring sessions for wild birth and sacred postpartum preparation, birth story integration, ceremonial loss support, or traditional birth work mentorship.